This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
I know people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Monday edition of the Fenway Rundown podcast. I'm Chris Cotillo in Cleveland, Ohio. Sean McAdam back home. The Rust Belt road trip here continues. The podcast does not stop no matter where we go. And the Red Sox coming off of a pretty impressive three-game sweep at PNC Park. Of course, there were negatives of the weekend, which we will get to in great detail. You heard about all those things first, of course, on our Fenway Rundown Insider Text program,
which you can join, Christopher, by texting the word join to 617-751-6257. Then click the link, which will give you a 14-day trial period. After that, it's $4.99 a month. Money well spent, I'd say.
Some guy on Twitter was talking about how he loved the podcast but stopped listening because of the insider text plugs.
And I can see how those 30 seconds every 30 minutes would really derail your enjoyment.
Of course, and also, just, you know, I'm not suggesting that you do this as a listener, because we do want you to sign up for the program because we are hashtag company men. But there is a little fast forward thing on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, which don't use it, but there is. I'm just saying there is. It is a thing. So, but we appreciate that former listener who definitely is not listening to me talk about him right now. Anyway, the Red Sox were in Pittsburgh over the weekend and they played really well. We will get to that, and I think it's important to talk about, you know, why they were able to win those games, how they put together the record, all that type of stuff. But we basically are a medical podcast at this point, talking about all the different injuries that have come through the Red Sox clubhouse in the first few weeks of the season. We talked at length about Story and Giolito and, you know, more minor quick things for Devers and O'Neill, Pavetta, Whitlock, and now the injury bug has struck again. It's Tristan Casas. He has an abdominal injury as we record this midday on Monday. The MRI is probably going on right now in Boston. We'll see if we have updates later on today. And Sean, we'll let people know on the Fenway Rundown. I'm kidding. We will let them know, but we're not going to do the plug there. The Casas thing, I think, is really brutal, obviously. I think it goes without saying, playing pretty good defensively, but really, really hitting the ball well the last few days, a lot of homers, you know, being kind of that consistent force. And I think just in terms of excitement, he's what Red Sox fans are excited about heading into the year. A lot of talk about an extension. He's a guy that, you know, was healthy for all of last year. And this kind of weird freak thing on a swinging so hard, you know, something happened in the rib cage. We don't know what it's going to be. But being there in Pittsburgh, I could tell you and the good people at home that the tone was not positive. You know, it wasn't maybe as dire as it felt with Trevor Story when they were talking about that. But, you know, Alex Cora, you know, Jamai Webster asked him on Saturday night, is Tristan okay? Saw he came out of the game, and Alex said, no, he's not okay. He's not doing okay. He's not at the ballpark. I think he was at a hospital getting imaging, the initial CT scan. And then yesterday I asked Cora pregame point blank, are you concerned about this being a lengthy thing? He said, yeah, I am. You know, this is a guy that posts. This is a guy that doesn't complain. For him to come out, come down and say, I can't hit, you know, it hurts too much. And for Tristan Casas himself to say, I'm in a lot of pain. I think they're bracing for him to be out way longer than the 10 days. You know, it's a weird kind of area of the body where, you know, Tristan yesterday said he doesn't think that there's a break in the rib cage, but, you know, it affects everything. You know, when it's uncomfortable to breathe, you're not going to be able to swing the bat, and that's where he is right now. So, I mean, it's stupid almost to speculate, to think this could be something that costs him the rest of the year, but they're not going to put him back out there till he's 100%, and he's a far way from that right now.
Yeah, I can't see it being a season-long IL stint or loss for the season, but he clearly is going to miss multiple weeks, if not more than a month or so. As you noted, these things tend to get easily aggravated. You hear stories all the time about players coming back a little too soon, just when they think they're nearly 100%. They may be 90% recovered and then start taking practice swings, tweak it all over again, and have to start the rehab and rest from the beginning. And that's where you get into a really long stay. But it's obvious whether it's a broken rib, a strained rib, some rib cartilage torn, whatever it is, this is not going to be 15 days or even, 3 weeks or so. I would say you're looking at a minimum of a month absence, maybe considerably longer. I just don't see it stretching for the entire year. That would be pretty rare. But it's a significant loss because there's not a lot of power in that lineup to begin with. Amazingly, they won this weekend despite being without, I would say, their four best hitters. Trevor Story, done for the year. Rafael Devers, perhaps back Tuesday. Tyler O'Neill, perhaps back Tuesday. And Tristan Casas, sidelined for a while. In any ranking or evaluation of the Red Sox batting order, you would say those are the four most consequential hitters they have, and they were all out, although Casas played Friday night and then the first at bat on Saturday before being injured. But for all intents and purposes, they didn't have him for two of the three games. They didn't have the other three for any of them, and they still managed to win three. And hats off to them. Look, I know the Pirates aren't very good, their record coming into that series notwithstanding. They're a young team that's got some intriguing talent that's building towards something, but they're not there yet. They are not even an average team, but they're a major league team, and to go in and get three wins under those circumstances should not easily be dismissed. It was a good weekend in terms of results for the Red Sox. It was definitively not a good weekend in the big picture, given the additional losses that they suffered.
A lot like the end of the West Coast trip, you know, where they, you know, won seven out of the 10 and they, you know, got hot and won three in Oakland, two out of three in Anaheim. But there was this kind of cloud over it because of Trevor Story and what happened there. We'll get kind of more to big picture in a second. One more point on Casas I want to make is that, you know, this is, I think, a particularly difficult injury for them to withstand because the depth at that position is not just not there, it's horrible. I mean, it is like wretched organizationally. And so yesterday, Pablo Reyes played first. He had, I think, two innings between the last couple of years at first base with the Red Sox. I don't think he'd ever started there before. And you have Bobby Dalbec, who, you know, I've been very impressed with his defense to start the season. I think everybody has. Cora said he might be the best defensive third baseman in the organization. He makes all the plays and he can play first, but it's a black hole in the lineup, and that's not exaggerating at all. It's 1-for-30 with 18 Ks, whatever it is. Like, I mean, it's an automatic out to the max right now. And so those are your two options on the major league roster. You go to AAA and you're talking about, you know, they don't have Tristan Casas waiting down there as your top prospect who can come up. They don't really have, you know, anybody in that boat. A couple of journeymen. Jamie Westbrook is a guy who, you know, the barrel man people liked in spring training but never played in the majors, 28. Nico Cavadas, who has gotten off to a great start in AAA, a lot of power, but he's not viewed as a prospect, defensively limited, I believe. Roby Gonzalez, he's hurt himself. I don't think he's even swinging the bat yet at Worcester, and first base, not his primary position. I mean, you're looking at, like, a really, really, really thin group here.
I would say the only potential positive here, and it requires an optimistic view of things, is that Dahlbeck may now get a chance to play on a regular basis. Now, that may sound like, you know, you may be hearing that and saying that's good news. Right. It is in this sense that Dahlbeck will get into a rhythm of getting four plate appearances every day. It's hard enough to bust out of a slump in which you're 1-for-30 with 18 strikeouts to date, in which you have become, as you noted, almost an automatic out. That's hard to overcome. It's even harder when you're playing maybe three times a week or four times a week. You play a game, you sit, you wait for another lefty, you play, you go 0-for-4 with three strikeouts, you sit two more days, wait for another lefty. That isn't any way to try to break out of that. When you're at least getting at-bats every day and know you're going to be the first baseman for a while, unless something happens that we don't foresee, unless they go make a trade, you know, there's been some suggestion, well, CJ Krohn was there and got released. Yeah, do you know how long it's going to take for him to get back up to speed and be available to play at the major league level? You're talking about another
where
few
we're going.
Weeks.
This is where we're going next.
Well, I'm saying that Bobby Dahlbeck's it for the most part here for the next few weeks. Even if they were to make a signing and stash somebody at AAA and try to get them some reps to be able to contribute in a few weeks, it's Dahlbeck for a while. And the only hope you have there is that getting into an everyday rhythm and routine, knowing he's going to be in the lineup the next day, whether he goes 4-for-4 or 0-for-4, maybe allows him to get on one of those patented hot streaks that we've seen him have, admittedly not for a long time, but back in 21 or 22, there were those patches where he would get hot. You don't even need him to really get hot. You need him to be a major league caliber hitter, someone who can hit 250 with the occasional bomb. They're obviously not getting that from him now. Maybe increased playing time and a better rhythm and routine will help him fix some things with his swing. That's all you have going for you at this point.
I think that, you know, if you actually look at the guys who are available, the issue being what you talked about, a lot of guys have, you know, now had a long layoff who are out there. There are some intriguing names out there if you wanted to add to that mix. Number one, and I forgot this guy was still a free agent, but maybe the best free agent who, you know, without off the field issues remains out there. And Brandon Belt had a good year in Toronto last year, 36, went unsigned. Nobody hit his price. And he is still available, obviously, a guy with a ton of experience in San Francisco.
And a very good defender, too.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is not some DH that puts a first baseman's glove on. He's an excellent defender, at least was in his prime. Even at his advanced age of 36, he would be far superior to anybody they have now defensively.
And if you look at kind of the guys who opted out, and these might be just guys to send to AAA at this point, but Krohn was here, Luke Voit, Trey Mancini. There's a few of these guys. Donovan Solano, still a free agent. He did not have a bad year in Minnesota last year. Like, there are options where if they want to sign a guy to a minor league deal or a low guaranteed major league deal where they start the year in the minors. Again, as Sean said, the issue is the buildup. For example, CJ Krohn, they cut loose, what, on March 24th or 25th?
Last week of March.
And so he has not been with a team in a month. He didn't get picked up. You start worrying, like, okay, these guys didn't get picked up by a team. Why not? You know, maybe it was Krohn's spring training that bad in the eyes of evaluators, or Voit or Mancini or whoever. Another candidate, a guy who has been playing, Jared Walsh, former All-Star with the Angels. All sorts of struggles and injuries and issues the last couple of years, but just get DFA'd by the Rangers. The way I look at it is, like, okay, maybe Dahlbeck's your starter for the next couple weeks, but I do think they should probably bring in one of these guys just as another option, you know, because if Dahlbeck gets hurt, then you're, you know, in a huge, horrible spot. I mean,
right.
they are already, but you know what I mean.
And it's not like, as you noted, you know, despite some other guys getting some playing time at first base in Worcester, it's not like bringing in a veteran like Walsh or Belt would be blocking somebody that you really want to see taking the next steps to the big leagues. Covetous doesn't fit into that category. Mm-hmm. So if he has to get some DH at bats or doesn't get the playing time he has, this is not blocking someone that you view as a prospect. The whole idea at AAA is to develop and help and augment the major league roster, and that has to take priority right now over anyone else's career. That may sound cold, but that's what the minor leagues and the player development system is all about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are options at that position. So we've seen them kind of do it pitching-wise. They've made three or four additions pitching-wise since the end of March. Chase Anderson, obviously, you know, Uwasawa, who I think is starting to potentially rise up to the point where he pitches here in the majors. Vladimir Gutierrez the other night. I mean, these are, in a lot of ways, live bodies for a team that needs it. And I think they could do that on the position side. And there are, you know, maybe not producers. I think Belt can still produce if he's, you know, healthy and in shape and all that stuff. But maybe not producers, but names you know. You know, Walsh, again, was an all-star a couple years ago. Krohn, Voit, Solano, Mancini, some of these guys that are out there. And they're, you know, for the most part, just sitting at home. And so I think that it's kind of a no-risk type of thing that they could do. But again, it's not like you're going to sign Brandon Belt and put him in the lineup tomorrow because he has not been on a team and not playing the game since September and all that good stuff. Let's get to the weekend. Sean touched on it. And, you know, I wrote the column yesterday that the Red Sox are basically spitting in the face of adversity. They are deciding that, you know, we are not going to, you know, let the injuries ruin the season yet. I think big picture wise, if you look at it, the win total for a team that does not have Story for the year, Giolito for the year, a banged up Devers, and now maybe Casas out for a while, and Pivetta and Whitlock on the IL, and bullpen games and all that stuff. I think over the course of time and over the long run, I think everybody agrees that it's going to decrease your win total over the long run. And
yeah, it's almost like the weekend they were playing on adrenaline, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like you get hurt, but you don't realize it or acknowledge it for a couple of days, and you keep going and you somehow figure out a way to piece it together. That's what this weekend looked like to me. And I don't want to take away from what they accomplished. Again, we put into context who the Pirates are. They're not a great opponent. We realize that. But I think you have to look at it like, how long is this sustainable?
Yeah.
When you do not have a legitimate run producer in your lineup. Now, it looks like they're going to get Devers and O'Neill back sometime during the Cleveland series, whether it's in time for the series opening game Tuesday.
It seems like it will be.
Yeah. You know, but they're unlikely to be 100% and being able to play every day. In all likelihood, they're going to need a day here and there as they ease back into the lineup. Mm-hmm. Right now, they do not have a legitimate run producer of the major league variety in their lineup. They've got a guy who is struggling to hit a .150 as their leadoff hitter because they can't afford to waste Jaron Duran's ability to drive the ball in the leadoff spot. They've got to drop him down to 2 or 3. So you're putting a guy who's already struggling, and something that Alex Cora vowed he would not do, that is put Rafaela in the leadoff spot and put additional pressure on him.
Well, that might have been for one day only, but we'll see tomorrow.
It may be, but it points to the limited number of options they have to piece this together for a while.
Well, so you know, to give them credit for, you know, deciding the adversity was not going to ruin the weekend. Like, you know, there's been previous iterations of the Red Sox the last couple of years when the adversity piled up in August and September. I think, you know, a lot of us looked at it and said, this team is really quit. They're deflated. They don't care. They want to get out of there or whatever. This group is young, and Alex Cora, I think, with a really good quote yesterday saying, well, they just don't know better. You know, like, they're just trying to prove themselves in the major leagues. And, you know, you look at it, and yesterday, some of the numbers as I was writing that column stand out. The highest paid player who took the field for the Red Sox yesterday, 15 guys did. Rob Refsnyder, $1.85 million. You look at the guys that were out there, you know, 1 through 9, all guys with very little major league experience, you know, like Wong, Heinemann, Maguire, those guys, you know, just for the three catchers that all played yesterday, none of those guys have, you know, gotten to 3-4 years of major league time. I think Ref Snyder was the longest tenured player out there, but Abreu, Rafaela,
Duran,
Reyes, Dahlbeck even, and the pitching staff, who had a bunch of guys who've just debuted, Boozer, Slayton.
And setup reliever starting the game.
Yep. I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, piecemeal, makeshift, whatever you want to call it, and they still were able to get out of there with three wins. I think, you know, it is not nothing. And again, the Pirates are not world beaters. Three of their wins are against Oakland. Three of their wins are against Pittsburgh. You know, I don't think the Angels are very good when they have played tougher teams. You know, a split with Seattle, swept by Baltimore, and lost 3 out of 4 to Cleveland at home. I think Cleveland's pretty good, as we saw last week. We'll see that again here. And then the Cubs and the Giants, a lot of talent on those teams. Minnesota, I know they've been horrible, but Minnesota and Atlanta on the road trip, a lot of talent on those teams. I think we'll see, you know, the schedule toughen up here. But they're 13-10. They have a better record than a lot of, you know, projected good teams in baseball.
Better record than the Dodgers, and who right. had that?
No one. And, I mean, honestly, the odds of them having a better record than the Dodgers, with Devers playing half the game, Story playing only 8 games, Giolito being out, Whitlock, Pivetta, all this type of stuff, would put it about 10,000 to 1, but here we are. And I think Alex Cora deserves credit for that. I do think some of the younger players deserve credit for that. You know, the two takeaways, I think, on the field, outside of the pitching was great over the weekend. Crawford's been outstanding. Bayo had his best start of the year Friday. You know, I don't think the Pirates can hit, but you know what? The Red Sox pitched, and they pitched well. If you're to ask me two lineup position player takeaways from the weekend, Willy Abreu rounding into form, you know, reached base like 10 out of 14 times, hits, he walked 3 times in a game, driving the ball, power in the first at bat of the weekend on Friday where he drove it out of PNC. I think he's a very good player. You know, like, he just had a very prolonged rut for all of spring training, the early part of the season, but he's rounding into form. And the other takeaway here is they've done it out of necessity, so I don't know if they get points for that, but Rafaela at shortstop changes the whole equation defensively. Yep. It's competent now. I know he made an error on Friday, but, yep. You know, that's a
big
deal.
You don't hold your breath on a routine ground ball to short anymore the way you right. did when David Hamilton was there. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned Cora, and I think that warrants a deeper dive here, because my criticism of Alex Cora in his time with the Red Sox is that I don't recall a lot of instances like last year, like the year before, where he has gotten more out of his roster than you might reasonably expect a manager to get. And he was fine. He was terrific even in 2018 with a loaded roster. He managed brilliantly in the postseason. I thought he made some innovative moves with the pitching staff, using some of the starters in relief, realizing that, you know, you don't have to hold back now. It's October. You have more off days, and you're going to be off for the winter in a week. So, you know, go to the whip, as it were, and Cora did that well. He also did a good job managing in 21, a team that was good but not great, that he had within 2 victories of going back to the World Series, and ultimately losing to a team that was far better, the Astros. But there have been a couple of seasons where, and you referenced it, Chris, where in the postseason, rather after the trade deadline, when there aren't reinforcements coming that the manager and players might have welcomed and might have needed, that there is kind of a give up. And we've seen that team take a faceplant after the deadline in each of the last 2 seasons. And I blame Cora for some of that, because he's had sort of a fatalistic view. Well, we didn't get any help, and the roster is what it is, and we can only do so much. He hasn't rallied the troops during a challenging time.
With the underdog t-shirts being the clearest evidence we have of that.
Right,
for the
right. It, more interested in sort of making a wise-ass statement to Heim Bloom than figuring out a way to get the team to perform better than it should on paper. So this is the opportunity, starting Tuesday and lasting for however long it might take, until Casas is back, until the starting rotation is whole again and Whitlock returns and Pivetta returns. This is on Alex Cora to maximize the talent, to keep everybody's head in the game, to platoon to figure out ways to put the best lineup, to be creative and keep them overachieving, not asking for him to keep pace with the Orioles or Yankees, talented teams who everybody would have said at the beginning of the year, we're going to finish ahead of the Red Sox and probably are still going to finish ahead of the Red Sox. But see what Alex Cora can do under the most difficult of circumstances. And I think this could actually be a telling stretch, both in terms of, if we're looking long-term, his marketability as a free agent in the market this winter, potentially. We all know mm-hmm. this is his last year of his deal with the Red Sox. He has got googly eyes about the Craig Council mega deal that was awarded to Council by the Cubs last fall. He has visions of cashing in a similar vein, perhaps, if things do not work out with the Red Sox, and maybe even if they do. And we also, it'll be interesting to see how Craig Breslow evaluates Alex Cora during this stretch. Does he have what it takes to get more out of the team than it appears he should? Can he get them to play over their heads for the next couple of weeks and keep those heads above water? I think that would be the biggest statement, that never mind what the team does in 24. Let's shrink it down to Alex Cora's personal future. He can really make himself a lot of money and make himself look far more attractive on the free agent market if the Red Sox somehow stay in this thing for the next month or so.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think he's, you know, shown at least the early returns here, 3 days in Pittsburgh, to be, you know, pretty good. So, you know, this is a group that is, you know, these guys are trying to prove themselves. They're not at the end of contracts. They're not, you know, distracted like maybe a lot of guys were in the last few years, veterans who had already won something. You know, there are a lot of guys who are trying to, you know, either, you know, stick in the majors or make the most of their first opportunity. You know, nothing's guaranteed to a lot of these guys except maybe Raffaello, who signed that extension. But these guys are all young. They're all hungry. And I think there's something to be said for that. And so kudos to them for the way they performed. You know, the pitching staff especially, but the defense looked better the last couple of days. Timely hitting, all that type of stuff. And the Red Sox are 13-10 at this point, which good for them. We're in Cleveland. I am. You're not. The Red Sox are. Today's an off day. Then three more games. Early start, 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and then an afternoon game on Thursday. As Sean said, Tyler O'Neill and Rafael Devers expected to be back in the lineup on Tuesday. That'll be obviously much welcomed for the Red Sox. Will be interesting to see if Masataka Yoshida comes back. He was weirdly out yesterday. They said he wasn't hurt, but something clearly is going on. I know it was a lefty on the mound, but they stacked lefties against Martin Perez, old friend and former Fenway Rundown guest, by the way. And they pinch hit Reese McGuire against a righty in a spot late. It worked to get a hit, but something to monitor there. And I do think a lot of roster moves are coming. Sean, before we wrap, we talked about first base. There could be some pitching changes. I would guess Tyler Heineman gets sent out for Tyler O'Neill. Tomorrow will be newsy with some Casas updates and some roster moves. But do you think there's going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4 different things going on here?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of swapping bodies out. Devers was never on the IL, so that's not a move they have to make. They've kind of carried him and played a man short for the last 5 or 6 days. But O'Neill will be coming off the 7-day IL concussion list. And somebody's got to go back. I agree. Heineman is the obvious choice here. They certainly don't need a third catcher, especially someone who doesn't have really any experience playing first or helping out anywhere else. So that one's easy. But you could see maybe somebody like Zach Kelly coming up. He's pitched extraordinarily well at AAA. Mm-hmm. Maybe swap him out for Cam Boozer if you're wondering whether they need another lefty in that bullpen. So I'm sure there'll be some shuffling of bodies, but the big news will be the return of two very important bats, O'Neill and Devers.
As well as the update on Casas and exactly what's going on there. So a lot to cover here in Cleveland before flying home on Thursday night. And then another quick turnaround as the Red Sox start a homestand. The Cubs and the Giants should be a fun weekend at Fenway with a big kind of market interleague team in. And, you know, we have a 3-man staff to bring it all to you. Sean, myself, Chris Smith on the site, the podcast, and I wanted to call out that tweeter one more time, but I don't know his name. The Fenway Rundown Insider Text Program.
You know, it strikes me that we almost had a Fenway rundown in Pittsburgh when you were in your Uber the other night, but that's a story for another day. Mm-hmm. But the vaunted Fenway rundown portal can be joined by texting the word join to 617-751-6257. Click on the link and you will be subscribed for free for 14 days, a trial period that we think you'll find so beneficial and entertaining, you will be rushing to sign up to hand over $4.99 a month thereafter.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.